Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The Rob Brown Show on your radio. It's the Fan Upstate. Welcome in, dudes, dudettes, amigos, amigettes, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages. I am Rob Brown, the man on the other side of the metaphorical glass this AM, the guy in charge of every sound that you hear entering your ear holes this AM is, of course, the great one, Lonzo. Great to have you guys along for the ride today. We have got a lot of stuff we've got to get into. Major League Baseball's wild card round continued last night. Game twos in four different beautiful cities across America. We'll tell you about those coming up here in just a moment as we do our water cooler cheat sheet, the top three sports stories that you need to know. We've got some college football news, including Lane Kiffin, who right now, it's Lane's world and we're all just living in it. The Ole Miss running Rebels QB last week was a media darling. Not only does he have his own 30 for 30 come out, which I have to tell you, looks highly entertaining, and I cannot wait to sit down and watch it because Lane Kiffin's career has been the trailer that I saw. I guess it was more of a preview than a trailer, but the preview that I saw yesterday detailed Lane's exit from the University of Tennessee. Remember, he got that job and he was there for a little while, like a year, and then he took a whole lot of money to leave and go coach USC. And in the trailer, you get the Lane Kiffin side of it where he's like, look, I always wanted to be the coach at USC. And the job was open, and they contacted me, and what I absolutely did not want to do was be at Tennessee for a handful of years and then sit down as an old guy and go, damn, I always wanted to be the USC head coach, and I had the chance, and I passed on it, and I regret it. So I went ahead and took it. But then they also tell the story from the perspective of the Tennessee fans who were, and I don't think I'm exaggerating when I use the word, rioting in Knoxville, Tennessee, the night that Lane Kiffin walked out in front of the press and announced it himself. Like, coaches don't do that, right? They don't. They may have a little farewell when they're getting on the plane, but they usually go to their new school and then they say, and thanks to Tennessee for the opportunity. I appreciate it. They're great people. I think they're going to be successful, but I'm glad to be. Lane was like, I signed the contract. I'm going to tell the people. Oh, it backfired. It was great. So they tell that, the story of him being with the Raiders, his journey to Ole Miss. Of course, he also had the revelation that LSU linebacker Will Weeks is now dating his daughter. So what'd he do? Went out there and beat LSU and knocked him out of the top five, put a whole bunch of points, and had Will, this is true, vomiting on the field because of how hard they were going after that cat. Like, yeah, man, like I'm not going to be the dad that cleans my gun when you come over to take my daughter out, but my football team's going to beat your football team's ass. Wait, that's way more pride
he's
injury.
Throwing up on the, so he wasn't sick or anything?
No, he was just the okay. The Ole Miss offense behind Chambliss, Trinidad Chambliss, was running at a billion miles an hour, and the LSU defense was gassed. My man was puking on the field. It's like, you want to talk about hurting a kid's pride because you're taking your daughter out? You don't do the old school dad of like, I'm not afraid of going back to jail. That's all. We don't do it anymore. Nah, you go out there and you make them puke on live TV.
I'm sure he was consoled and he was fine.
Yeah, I'm sure he's got a lot of NIL money. He'll probably be okay. He could walk across the field to
I was more talking about the daughter.
Oh, yeah, she's fine too. So, she's fine too. Will could walk across the field and be like, hey, you got me, coach, and that's great. I got $1 million NIL contract and a date with your daughter tonight. How you feel, big dog? I think Will's fine. But it's Lane's world. We're all living in it. Lane had some comments yesterday. He believes that dynasties are dead in college football. And I got to tell you, I think he's right. And I don't hate it. We'll talk about that a little bit later on in the show. We've got NFL news as we get moving into week 5 of the NFL season. All of that coming up on the show. But It is 7:04 in the morning, which means you are inside of an hour until you've got to get your behind to the office. Sit down, log in, respond to all those emails, do all those projects that you don't want to do. Let's be real. You're killing time until tonight because we've got football on tonight, and all you want to do is watch football, and I understand that, and you understand that. So let me help you kill some time, shall I? You're going to talk sports to do it. You need to know what's going on in sports. That's why we do this. I mean, he's right, you know.
He's absolutely right. It's a profound statement.
Yeah, he's right. Water cooler, Chi-Chi, top three sports stories you need to know before you get to the office and start killing time till football night in America. This is what you're talking about. Item number one. I feel like I could have let that breathe in another few seconds, you know? That's all right. We got there.
It was impactful. I loved it.
All right, good enough. If it was impactful, I'm good with it. We talked about this in the last hour, but it is absolutely and without question, as far as I'm concerned, the biggest story happening in sports, period, right now. According to an article from Pete Thamel and Dan Wetzel posted to ESPN yesterday, the Big Ten is in discussions about a private capital deal that would infuse at least $2 billion into the league and its schools, according to Thamel and Wetzel. The discussions include a 10-year extension of the league's grant of rights that would go until 2046. Effectively, any of the rights surrendered to the conference in the grant of rights, the conference will now be in control of conference-wide. According to sources, the private capital deal and grant of rights extension have been discussed for months and presented in multiple forms. A deal and the grant of rights extension would be a blow to the outside entities attempting to form a super league around college sports. That's an opinion here, which I do not necessarily subscribe to from Wetzel and Thamel, because I do not think we will have a super league. I do think we will have super leagues. And I think the Big Ten is the foundation of one of them. The SEC is the other. And BT Dubs, if the Big Ten does this and they do end up creating a super league, they do indeed end up signing this deal and getting a $2 billion influx into the conference by signing away X percent of ownership of the conference to a private company, you better believe the SEC is next in line. They will do the same thing, and they will get as much, if not more, for the same thing. A decision on the private capital deal is expected in the upcoming weeks from the schools in the Big Ten. The Big Ten has said to, well, sources told Thamel and Wetzel that they want consensus across the conference. And there are a couple of the schools, larger brands, including specifically named Ohio State and Michigan, that are mildly hesitant to sign off on this deal. Now, my belief is that a $2 billion investment spread across the conference would do a lot to move lower-level teams in the conference closer to upper-level teams than it would elevate upper-level teams further ahead of everybody else, which is why, much like has happened in the ACC, where Florida State and Clemson were like, look, you want to keep the GOR? We need to get more than Wake Forest does. And the ACC ultimately had to relent out of a sense of self-preservation. I suspect we will see some sort of concession to those two schools here. We will find out. The setup being discussed, according to sources, is what will essentially be the formation of a commercial entity inside of the Big Ten that all streams of revenue generation for the conference, that includes media rights, it includes sponsorships, etc., would flow into, and then it would be in charge of distributing the money back out to the schools within the conference. So, one of the examples given was by Nebraska Athletic Director Troy Dannon last week when the conversation about corporate logos on jerseys came out. He said, if you jump in now and I'm going to get a little bit of money because of the jersey patches, I would really like to see if there's an opportunity for our conference to put all of those jersey patch rights together, and all of a sudden they're worth a whole lot more to the institutions when 18 are playing instead of one. Point being here that if Ohio State could go sell their jersey patch for $5 million and Iowa could go sell theirs for $750,000, but the conference could create a package where you get all 18. Or maybe it is you split them up into different games. So like maybe you have a jersey patch for this company on game one and then a different one for this one. Maybe all of a sudden Ohio State's jersey patch value is $10 million instead of five. And all of a sudden Iowa, instead of getting $750,000, gets five, right? That's the thought behind this. I have one fear and one fear alone. And that fear is there is a tipping point. Now, I don't know what that tipping point is. And to be honest with you, I think it's way off in the distance. But to me, there is a tipping point. The NFL hasn't hit it yet. Despite the Kaepernick stuff, despite the rules changes, despite them pretty much all but saying, hey, look, like profit is our key motivator here. There is a tipping point where I think that people say, no, it's not what I love anymore. It's not what I love anymore. And I will tell you right now, I know that because, and I did not know if I would ever fall into this spot. It is not intentional. It is not a decision that I actively made, but that's what's happening to me with wrestling right now. Like, I'm at a point now where I'm still checking in. I'm still watching the highlights. I'm still following on social media, whatever. But I haven't even watched the, like, condensed full version of Monday Night Raw in probably 4 or 5 weeks now. Like, I get told, here's the 2 or 3 highlights you have to see. So, I'm following the story of John Cena and Cody Rhodes and whatever. But, like, I'm not tuned in every time they grab a mic. I'm like, just give me the highlight clips and I'm out. Because it has gotten to the point where it's too much for me. I don't need Michael Cole going, oh, there goes Randy Orton. He's getting the Slim Jim table. And it's just a table. It's just a table. Just get the table. I can't live in a world where I would hear Bubba go, Devon, get the Slim Jim table. I don't need it. And I love Slim Jims, but I don't need it.
Slim Jim's been a sponsor of WWE since Macho Man Randy Savage.
So, but you've never heard the corporate sponsor here table before.
Back in the day, there were Slim Jim matches for sure. I get your point.
It all started falling apart for me for the Diet Mountain Dew or the Mountain Dew Code Red Dark match with Bray. I'm like, you're gonna have Bray wrestle in the dark? That's our plan here? What are we doing, guys? Come on. So, point is, I think even for college football, and that is far, far further in advance than wrestling is, there's a point where you go, nah, it's just not the same anymore. It's not. And I don't know where that plateau is, but I do think it's there. But I can tell you, in my opinion, if a private equity fund gets to the point where they are controlling or at least having a massive impact on the decision-making of the Big Ten, that's a step in that direction to me. We'll come back to this later on because we do need to get to item number 2. We have not gotten to this story yet, but we will because it deserves its own segment as well. A federal appeals panel on Wednesday dismissed the NCAA's eligibility case against Vanderbilt quarterback Diego Pavia. Diego Pavia playing this season under a preliminary injunction. The injunction basically allowed Diego Pavia to play while an appeals court decided if a legal decision that said Diego Pavia's JUCO time should not count against his NCAA eligibility to play football. In the past, it has. Now, as of now, because of this and because of the cornerback out of Indiana, it doesn't. Meaning that kids can leave high school, they can go play a couple of years of JUCO ball to develop their talents, then they can go play NCAA football. That in of itself doesn't sound awful, and so you recognize that. We got to see how far this gets pushed. Could guys play 4 years of JUCO ball and then come play NCAA football? Now you're talking about 23-year-old guys that are playing college football until they're 27. That started as a mild exaggeration to make a warning of where this could go, and now it's like, oh, that's actually a real and feasible thing. On top of that, with this appeals decision, not only does Diego Pavia get to play, but I asked this question when we had a similar story last week with the Indiana kid. Does this not open the door to say that every single rule, regulation, and guideline of the NCAA is legally challengeable, and it looks like the students have been wiping the floor with the NCAA legally? So basically, anytime that there is an NCAA rule in place that a player somewhere that has an agent and a lawyer doesn't like, they can challenge it legally. And since all of these findings are based under, I'll say largely because I can't say consensus, but like majoritively under antitrust laws, because the NCAA does not have antitrust exemption like the NFL does, all of these guidelines, all of these rules are being knocked down out of a violation of antitrust laws, which means that isn't the NCAA just in its entirety incapable of making a rule or enforcing the ones they have, but making new rules that fall outside of that decision-making process. We're going to talk about this later because I do think it is a very big deal in the landscape of college football as well. But we got to get to item number three. The wild card round of Major League Baseball continued at Game 2s yesterday. The first Game 2 was the Detroit Tigers up 1-0 on the Guardians. That series now tied at a game apiece after a 6-1 win by C-Town at the crib over Detroit. Casey Mize went to the bump for the Tigers through three innings, gave up a hit and a run, struck out one. The hit was a big dong that put the Guardians up 1-0 after Valera blasted one 4-11 to center. Over on the other side, Tanner Bibee going 4.2, gave up five hits and a run. Cade Six, though he took 87 pitches to get through 4.2 innings before they turned it over to five relief pitchers. From the dish, Cleveland only needed six hits. It only needs six hits when three of them are gigantic dongs. Three home runs and six hits for the Cleveland Guardians last night. Valera had one in the first. Ruccio had one in the eighth. And Naylor had one in the bottom of the eighth as well. That was a three-run blast that broke the door open against the Tigers. So we will go Game 3 in C-Town today at 3 o'clock. In Game 2 yesterday, the Padres got one back against the Cubs, a 3-0 shutout win over the Windy City Warriors. It was Dylan Cease that went to the bump. Just 3.3, three hits, no runs allowed. Did K5 in the win. From the dish last night, seven hits for the San Diego Padres, including a Manny Machado shot in the fifth that scored he and Fernando Tatis Jr. Kelly Merrill hit a sack fly to right in the first that scored Fernando Tatis Jr. to give them one run. Machado's two-run blast made it 3-0. Chicago could not get anything going, just four hits in the contest last night. We'll play Game 3 in that series today at 6 o'clock. Then the Red Sox and the Yankees went at it. The Yankees staying alive. A 4-3 win over the Red Sox last night. Carlos Rodon went to the bump, six innings, four hits, three runs allowed. Cade Six through six. It was Williams that would get the win with his one-inning pitch. Bednar would get the save with the ninth-inning pitch last night. The Yankees, 10 hits last night, including a home run from Ben Rice in the first inning that set the tone. For the second time in a row, the team trailing late in the game had plenty of opportunities to get it done and just could not. Story homered the left in the top of the six. That tied it up at three, but Austin Wells would single to right and score. Jazz Chisholm Jr. in the bottom of the eighth. The Red Sox had some opportunities in the ninth, could not convert. They will go Game 3 at 8 o'clock this evening. And finally, the LA Dodgers are moving on. Another offensive explosion out of the team from LA. They had 13 hits last night. None of them home runs, interestingly enough. This was not a game for the Dodgers where the Dodgers were relying on their dongs to get them through. It was just real good. Not even really small ball, because they were powering the ball out to the outfield with regularity. You had a multi-hit days from Hernandez and a couple of other Dodgers last night. From the dish, Yamamoto, 6.2, gave up four hits, two runs. Cade 9 went 113 pitches. Reason why? Because the belief was that if the Dodgers went to a Game 3 with the Reds, they would start Shohei Ohtani in Game 3. But that also means that Shohei Ohtani, who is starting to go deeper into games, would not likely be available until probably Game 2 or 3 of a series against Philadelphia. That is going to be a much more difficult series because the Phillies are A, good, and B, rested. So the goal last night, I think, was to get Yamamoto as deep into this game as they could get him so that they could save Shohei Ohtani and the rest of the rotation guys so they could throw, although they will not have Blake Snell, their number one pitcher in that series, I think, though they may not have him, at least not on full rest when Game 1 with the Phillies rolls around, they will have everybody else on full rest. So they said, we'll go ahead and go deep into this game with Yamamoto, 113 pitches. And he performed very well before they brought in Trinan Sheehan, Vesia, and Sasaki, who closed this thing out. just 6 hits last night for the Cincinnati Reds when it was all said and done. So the Reds season over, the Dodgers season carrying on. They will get the 2-seed Philly. The other games coming up later on today will dictate out of the Tigers, Guardians, Padres, Cubs, Red Sox, and Yankees, who is moving on. Obviously, tomorrow we will set you up for our weekend playoffs with game one of the divisional round on Saturday across all 4 of the divisional round series. Let's take a break. When we come back, Lane Kiffin said dynasties in college football are dead. And I think he's right to some degree. And I'm having a love-hate relationship with the comments that Lane Kiffin made about dynasties being dead. I have a love-hate relationship, mainly because I love one part of it, but now I need to know who I get to hate moving forward. We'll talk about that next on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, 2-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It has been the fall, the season of Lane Kiffin, not like the fall of Lane Kiffin. He's had like 2 or 3 falls of Lane Kiffin's, but he's back. Joey Freshwater. You can't kill Joey Freshwater, baby. Lane Kiffin, after the league added Oklahoma and Texas and moved to their 9 conference game slate starting next year, Lane Kiffin, the coach, by the way, of the 5-0 number 4 ranked Ole Miss Rebels. Maybe Joey Freshwater's figured it out. By the way, Trinidad Chambliss is an absolute dude. Said that he believes with the 9 game conference schedule and with name, image, and likeness rules and the transfer portal, he believes that dynasties are likely over. He told ESPN yesterday, quote, "In my opinion, the dynasties are over. Alabama with Coach Saban and then Kirby at Georgia, where they had those rosters year in, year out, and there would be a bunch of wins by 30 points in the conference. Those days are done," end quote. Kiffin went on to add, quote, "When I was at Alabama, they'd be like, go watch the outside linebackers. And there's 6 of them over there that are first round picks. That's not going to happen anymore, because if they don't play, they're going to leave. They can't keep them all anymore." This is, to me, this is an argument for the portal, not against it. This is an argument for the portal and NIL, not against it. I don't know about y'all. Actually, I do know about y'all because I've been doing this job 17 years. I think I've got a decent finger on the pulse of the college football landscape, or should I say fanscape. When Alabama was Alabama, when Nick Saban was at his peak, when what Lane Kiffin here is saying is true, that you knew Alabama's backup linebackers more than you knew the linebackers at like any other SEC school, because they said, this kid's going to be an NFL first-round draft pick. He's just not quite as good as the NFL first-round draft pick they have playing now, but next year he will be. Not going to happen anymore. And the reason that I have a love-hate relationship with Coach Kiffin's comments from yesterday is this. Because on one hand, I love that parity is happening in college football. Now, it is always going to be tilted to the SEC and the Big Ten, if only because they have the most money. And therefore, when we talk portal and NIL, they have the most that can go towards portal and NIL. They also have, obviously, and this can never be changed, a historical track record of being able to put your guys on big TV, which gets them more notice, gets them more scouting, et cetera, makes the path to the NFL easier for the best players of the best players of the best players.
I need a definition. What is a dynasty? What is a dynasty in college football?
You know, this
is it championships or is it just playing at a high level?
It's championships. I think you can be dynastic without championships, but to be a dynasty, it's championships.
I'm looking at a list of national championships, and I don't see a dynasty.
I don't think there is anymore. But
no,
I
don't see one, period.
You don't think Alabama under Nick Saban was a dynasty?
How many championships do you have to win to be a dynasty?
Okay, so let me say this. Let me say this because I want to dial in on why this conversation from Lane Kiffin is important. But the answer to that is, obviously, it is largely subjective. Your qualifications for a dynasty and mine are different. What I will say is, much like, who was it, one of the Supreme Court justices said, I don't know what porn is, but I know it when I see it.
No, that was Tipper Gore.
I thought she was the one that had the bad words in music thing.
She could have had both.
That's also true. Maybe she did. I don't know. All right. So, no, it was. It was Supreme Court Justice Potter Stewart.
Oh, yeah, Potter. Yeah,
Potter Stewart.
We all remember Potter, right?
And now keep in mind, that was in like the 1960s, and the point was like stuff that happened in the 1960s that was considered pornographic today is like advertisements, right? So, blah, blah, blah. Not the point. Point here is, I don't know how to define a dynasty because it's subjective and different for every person, but I do know when I see one. Alabama under Nick Saban was a dynasty. I would be willing to make the argument, some of you will agree, some of you not, that Clemson had about a 4-year, maybe a 5-year run as a dynasty. You take 2 out of 4, I'd say that if only for a short period, you're dynastic. Whatever. The point is, I don't think you're going to see a lot of that anymore. I think you're going to see greater parity.
See, I do agree with the parity, and I do think that is an advantage of Transfer Portal and NIL, that those players who couldn't play know they can go somewhere else and play, and good for them. And I think we are starting to see like in the ACC and some of the other conferences where it's kind of evening out, where the classic top of the conference, like Clemson, is now, there's, even though people, well, they're more talented. Are they? I don't know. Because people are moving around and they're able to make the rosters better. I think maybe there are still dynasties because Ohio State still exists. Michigan still exists. Georgia still exists. Alabama still exists, even though I thought they were down. Here's the thing. These are the classic schools that people are so tired of. The same 3 or 4 schools always in the – and they're going to be. Even with all this parity that's now, it's not going to change that.
Okay, I don't disagree with that. You are always going to have the blue blood schools that have the most money at the top. But here is what I'm also going to add. Joey Freshwater built the Ole Miss Running Rebels through the portal. They're number 4 in the country. I'm not saying they're going to be around in national championship time. I'm saying they're in the catbird seat to be there right now. I am saying that
Florida State did the same thing a couple years
absolutely,
ago.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I am saying that Indiana. In what way, if I'd asked you 5 years ago, hey, you think Indiana's ever going to be in the front seat for a playoff spot for a championship? You'd have been like, hell no. But here they are. Why? Built guys out of the portal. We're able to take advantage of some NIL stuff, et cetera, et cetera. Texas Tech. That school is only ranked number 11 in the country at 4-0 because a donor gave them $1,000 million, and they said, we're putting this 100% into the football team's roster. Texas Tech, number 11 in the country. And I would make the argument, if they played today, I think Texas Tech might be favored over Texas by 0.5 point or 1.5 points. Really, like, they are that good. So I agree with Lane Kiffin in that I think the era of dynasties is over. I think there will always be the teams at the top, but there will be fewer years where you go, it's Ohio State and Georgia and everybody else. Because right now, let's look at the top 10. Is Ohio State good enough to win a title right now? Yeah. Is Oregon? Yeah. Is Miami? Yeah. Is Ole Miss? Yeah. With Trinidad Chambliss? Absolutely. Is Oklahoma under Brent Venables? Yes. Is A&M under Mike Elko? Yes. Is Penn State under James Franklin? Yes. Is Indiana under Kurt Cignetti? That's probably the only maybe in the game. And oh, by the way, Fernando Mendoza, right now a Heisman Trophy front runner, is there because of all of this. Texas, good enough to win a title? Maybe out of Texas, but they're starting to put up 50 burgers on the board. Maybe Arch was a little dinged up and he's healthy now. We'll find out. Is Bama at 3-1 good enough to win a title? They just beat Georgia, and I said yes to Georgia, so why not? LSU, good enough to win a title? Lost to Ole Miss, the number 4 team in the country. Yes. The point is, in years gone by, there was, like, in a great year, four, maybe five teams you thought were championship caliber. I'm looking down the list right now. I don't get to a no until I get down to number 14, Iowa State. And I don't even say it's a no. Like, I think Iowa State's like, if everything's perfect, sure. If everything's perfect, they could get there. Tennessee at number 15. 4-1. They've only lost to a powerhouse. Are they in that mix? I don't know. I don't think so. But it's not a definite no. Vanderbilt under Clark. Like, Clark Lee's got Vandy in a conversation. At 5-0. What happens if Vandy goes and beats Alabama? Do we have to say they're good enough to win a title now? I think the answer is no to that.
Are you saying they're not? We don't know, signs are leaning more towards that than the other
way. Why? Diego Pavia, right? So the point here is, and Clark Lee, because he's a football dude.
10-year starter, Diego Pavia.
Maybe so. The point here is, Lane Kiffin is exactly right, and you can quite literally see it in these rankings. Georgia, not a dynasty anymore, because there's like five teams in the SEC that are right there on par with them. Same with Alabama, same with Oklahoma, same with Ole Miss, whatever. Here's the part that is the hate in the love-hate relationship with what Lane Kiffin said yesterday, that dynasties are dead. And he said in the SEC, but I think you can extrapolate that to in college football, because it's not any different in the Big Ten. Now, I do think the Big Ten's a little more top-heavy right now, but I also think the teams at the top of the Big Ten are all grouped a lot closer than they have been in years gone by. Here's what I hate about all of this. Who am I supposed to hate? Who's supposed to be the bad guys now, right? Because when we had dynasties, when Nick Saban had Alabama at the top of their game, it was fun to hate Alabama. You know how I know it was fun to hate Alabama? Because Nick Saban's gone. They haven't been that team in 3 years, and most of us still hate Alabama because of what they did in their dynastic run. When Georgia, who I do not think is a dynasty, they win one this year, maybe we're having a different conversation, but Georgia had a dynasty run in there right when Nick Saban left for a hot minute, and it was fun to hate on Georgia. We reveled anytime a Georgia player got in trouble, right? It was fun to hate on Georgia. There is one thing that one particular radio host said that I am not a fan of. The host, not what he said. The host said, he's a nationally syndicated guy whose name I won't say because I think he's a clickbait troll most of the time. But he very, very famously runs a television ad about his show where he said, "You can root for the underdogs all day. I root for greatness. I root for dynasties. I root for the greatest of all time. It's more fun. It's more entertaining." I think whether you're rooting for them or you're rooting against them, it is kind of fun to have like a central figure of hate for a sport. I'm going to say hate. I obviously mean like good-natured football hate. I'm not talking about like what happened at the Ryder Cup. I'm talking like good-natured fun hate. I don't hate Alabama fans. I have fun when they lose. I like to pick on them when they lose, but that's because they had freaking 12 years where they got to beat the hell out of everybody else. You deserved it. I'm talking good-natured college football hate. But I don't think we're going to have like that central figure of hate. Everybody in America hated Georgia for a little while. Everybody in America hated Clemson for a little while. Everybody in America hated Alabama for a friggin' decade and a half. In the 90s, everybody hated Florida State and Florida and Miami when the title ran through the Sunshine State for the 90s. Everybody loves to have a central figure of hate. And while I do think the parity is good, and while I do think it is great that we will not have these 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10-year dynasties where one school is just a central focus and everybody else exists, I do think it's a little disappointing that I don't have anybody to hate right now. Like, there's not going to be that central pillar of bleep that team, that coach, and their fans, and everybody else is all together on that same bus. Yeah, I might dislike your school, and I might dislike your school, and I might dislike your school, but all my homies hate Bama. We're not going to have the all my homies hate team anymore. And that is the only negative drawback to this, in my opinion. Jacob said, LSU is the bad guy because Brian Kelly is a punk. It's fun to see them lose. Same for Clemson as a Carolina fan. Yeah, like, but I don't think the nation hates Clemson anymore because they don't fear them anymore. I do think everybody, maybe that's what we need. Maybe it needs to be less hate a school and hate a guy. Maybe you hate Brian Kelly and his family. I don't know. We'll see. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back here in just a minute. Chris Fowler put up a very long Instagram post. He says, "You guys are being too mean to coaches." And I would like to play it for you and address it next on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Instagram is a place that people can go and say anything you want. And there are times.
Anything?
Anything you want. There are times that I think that social media might be the worst thing that's ever happened to society. Because unfortunately, social media allows people who have opinions to express them that are bad.
Do you remember when it first started and you had a chance to
Yes, I do, Lonzo.
Yeah.
I was in college when Facebook started. Yes, I do.
That's not what I'm saying. Find old friends and rekindle relationships in a way where friendships, just friendships. All yours were probably friendships with benefits, but I'm just talking about, you know, and family members who you hadn't talked to in a long time. Now you can just, you don't have to talk to them on the phone. You could just throw a quick comment at them or something like that. In the beginning, it was really cool.
It was great.
There are still parts of it that are not bad.
Absolutely. Absolutely. However, it also, again, amplifies the dumbest voices. And unfortunately, those voices catch on with people. Now, there is also a very good side to social media. And the very good side to social media is that there are also, although they do not get the attention, which sucks, there's a lot of smart people out there who utilize social media for very good reasons, to spread either positivity or truthful, accurate information in a world of disinformation.
Some have made a living off of it.
Absolutely. So, yes, it is filled. And unfortunately, in this great United States of ours, many of us laugh, but an unfortunate number of people follow, and when I say follow, I don't mean on social media, I mean like their philosophies, are really dumb people. But it does provide, at the same time, resources for really smart people with good opinions to get out there. Chris Fowler is obviously one of the primary voices in college football. And Fowler put up it's a long clip here. It's like 2 minutes. But I want to play it because I do think it is important, especially considering all of the conversation that has been happening over the past couple of weeks about Dabo Swinney and his job at Clemson. Chris Fowler reacted to the criticism, and a specific and particular type of criticism, of coaches this way. So, I have two different sides of my response to that. And for the record, I do agree with the primary point, which is, it should never be taken to a point where it is deeply personal. It should never be taken to a point where your criticism goes past football. But at the same time, the reason that it does, Chris, is that we as fans, as passionate as, let's assume everything you said is true about every single coach, as passionate as those coaches are about helping people, we are about our football teams. That is part of what has made college football something that pays you, Chris Fowler, a hell of a lot of money to talk behind a desk and to put on a headset and call football games. If it wasn't for our passion and love and desire to watch our team go win and succeed, your job wouldn't exist. So, yes, when someone becomes, in our opinion, accurate or not, when someone becomes what we believe to be the reason that a thing that we are investing in, yes, financially, but also our time, energy, effort, passion, whatever, yeah, they're going to take some criticism, sure. And I would go so far as to say that when you are getting paid, let me just pull a number out of thin air. $11 million to do a job and you're not doing the job well enough? Yes, you're going to take it. Like, that's part and parcel. I think that I want to believe. Let me put it that way. I want to believe that everything Chris Fowler just said is true about every coach. And I can tell you that. I do not coach now. I have been looking at getting back into it because I genuinely do love coaching. And it's not just the X's and O's of the game, which I love, whether it's basketball, baseball, or football. I love the X's and O's of the game. But also, I cannot tell you, over there in the corner of this studio, there is a baseball bat. That baseball bat is from the last Little League team that I coached. It is autographed by every kid that played on that team. If you put up a picture right now, I can name every one of them. Every one of them. Because at the end of the year, they, without telling me, threw me a party. And said, this has been the most fun we've done, blah, blah. It was great. I believe that there is an element to that. I feel that element. I don't know that I feel it enough that it would become like the all-time profession or that I'm good enough that it would be a full-time profession that I would ever be able to get to a level of, say, a Dabo Swinney. But also, when you get to that level, that's kind of part and parcel. Now, one other side of this. You absolutely should not. Let me say that again for the people in the back. Should not treat guys who are coaching your kids' middle school team like that, or your kids' high school team, or your kids' travel ball team, or the AAU team that your kid's on. You shouldn't treat those coaches because, and I will say, there are some exceptions to this as well. Guys who are coaching middle and high school teams are doing it because they love to coach. That is 100% true. I've been around a lot of them. There are some people who coach AAU and travel ball teams because it is good money. And those of you who pay for your kids to play AAU or travel ball, you know that. I have actually had I don't want to say a vendetta against, but I actually have a lot of hesitation towards some travel and AAU teams because I think you create a world where you price out a lot of kids from having a place to play. I just do. Because if all those parents who might otherwise be Little League parents are paying buku dinero to send their kid on a travel ball team, there may not be enough money left over for actual Little Leagues anymore. And that's sad, to be honest with you. Those coaches should not be beat up, though. They shouldn't, because those are doing what Chris is saying. But I would also argue that, Chris, when guys get to the level that they are coaching college football teams, at least the biggest college football teams, but I would argue the same is true for any college team that you know the name of. It's not like they're destitute. It's not like they're living under bridges because they go, yeah, I love what I'm doing and I love making kids better, but they're getting paid good money to do it and getting paid good money to return the investment of the people who put the money in the program that ends up paying them. Chris isn't wrong. I think there are some people who go too far in how and when and why they criticize coaches. If you are in Clemson and you see Dabo walking around in the grocery store and you walk up and you unleash hell on him in the grocery store, that's a bad thing to do. Don't do that. Don't do that. But if you pop on the message board and you go, it's falling apart and Dabo's doing a terrible job keeping it together, that's different. That's the place for that.
Not to be cynical here, because I would never do that. But who is Chris Fowler talking to? Because the people who do that, they're not listening to him. They're not listening. They listen to the first few seconds and go, yeah, whatever. And they're still going to keep doing that. I don't know. I mean, again, it would be awesome if his words were able to sway someone from doing that. Even if he sways one person, I guess it was successful. But those people who do that, you're not going to stop them by just having nice words.
I wouldn't disagree. But I would also say that if change is required, and again, do I think this is like an overarching issue across all of college football that impacts all of us? No, I do not. But I do think that there is a good proportion of people who could be told, like, hey, dude, like, you need to calm down, all right? I don't know. All my Taylor Swift clips have disappeared. Only those, though. Nefarious plot in motion, obviously.
I had nothing to do with it.
There are some people out there that need to be told calm down. I have sat before. And again, like, I don't have an issue with you moaning and complaining about the performance of your football team when you're sitting at a bar at 11:30 at night with the boys talking ball. That's the time and that is the place. That is different, however, than, again, like seeing Dabo walking around Publix and being like, now's the time.
All right, you said that twice. There's no way that he does his own shopping.
I have actually heard stories from people that, credible people. I know that have said, you will, and it's not all the time, but you will absolutely just see him out in public living his life sometimes, right?
Yeah, but not grocery store, though.
Well, again, I'm just making up a metaphor. There's nothing Lonzo hates more than metaphors.
Well, no, I just believe, I love accuracy, though. I believe that when you reach a certain level of celebrity and money, that other people shop for you.
Okay. Wherever Dabo may be in public, that is a non-football event.
I mean,
event.
I don't think that you're getting your morning breakfast and you look over in the corner and there's Dabo eating an Egg McMuffin. I don't believe that.
Okay. It's irrelevant, the hypothetical of where we see Dabo in public. The point is, if you see the man out living his life in public and you walk up and you go start hammering him in public.
Now, Shane Beamer, he'd be sitting in the corner eating an Egg McMuffin because that's a man of the people.
Whether you see him eating a Egg McMuffin or walking down the middle row of your local Publix or in church or wherever, if you see that person trying to live their regular, normal, day-to-day, non-football life, and you're the type of person who's like, now's my time. Now's the time to voice what I think is the change necessary for the program. That's not good.
That's not the time and place. I completely agree with you there.
And I do think there's enough of that. Here's what I'll say. It's true, and I say this about everything.
How true is it?
If anything is going to change about any situation, it always starts with speaking out. Even if that message is not going to get to the intended audience, the audience that needs the change, what you do is you begin to inspire other people who are on your camp to also feel like they can call out what is happening.
So you don't believe preaching to a choir is the thing?
No, because the reality is, while the concept is, to use that metaphor, you're preaching to the choir, what you were trying to do is get the choir to then go out into the public and do the same thing. And Fowler doing it on Instagram is going to reach a million people or whatever, but if of those a million people, if a quarter million people go out and then say and start telling their buddies who do act like that, hey man, that's kind of a jerk move, maybe don't do that, then that is much more like it. Change doesn't happen from people like Chris Fowler or people in any demographic, politics, law, whatever. It doesn't happen for people giving their well-thought-out opinions on social. It happens on them winning over with good, solid argument people in public who then go out and have conversations with their neighbor, and they spread it in a way that the neighbor goes, oh, I didn't think about it that way. They didn't hear Fowler, but they heard you. So I like what Chris is doing here, and I think his point is fair. What I would respond back to, though, for Chris is, it shouldn't be shielded from criticism entirely. Dabo's making $11 million a year to do the job. Do the job. There's a difference. You get me? That's my take. All right, when we come back here in just a minute, we're going to talk some baseball. We got your audio blitz, a couple of clips I want to play. And I said Shador was going to do something earlier this week, and then he did the thing yesterday. And it's mildly problematic. I'll tell you what that is and more. All of that comes up after Lonzo tells you about baseball scores I did not tell you about now in this Sports Flash.
Yeah, let me do the job. The Cleveland Guardians tied their three-game series with Detroit with a 6-1 victory. Tanner Bibee went 4.2 innings with 5 hits and 1 run allowed, while Cleveland recorded 6 hits, including a George Valera homer in the first inning that set the tone. The elimination game is today at 3. San Diego forced an elimination game today with a 3-0 win over the Cubs. Dylan Cease gave up no runs in a short 3.2 inning start, but Mason Miller, who struck out 5 of the 6 innings pitched, including a punch out with a 104.5 mile per hour fastball, which is really, really fast. It's the fastest recorded pitch in postseason history. That game is today at 5. The Yankees defeated the Red Sox 4-3 to force a game 3 in their series. Carlos Rodon pitched 6 solo innings with 4 hits and 3 runs allowed, while the Yankee offense punched up 10 hits, including a Ben Rice homer and an Austin Wells sac fly to score the winning run in the 8th.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.